All right, we'll go ahead and call to order the Stevensville Budget Workshop for the Town Council. Let the record reflect all council members, the mayor and the clerk are present, as well as Chief Marble and his clerk, Janelle Berthoud, Robert Underwood, and our Parks and Recreation Director, Bobby. Thanks for joining us. These workshops follow a similar format as we've done in the past for the most part. Tonight we're doing salary review for all departments. You'll get a copy of the draft expenditure budget as well as preliminary revenues, and those will be in summary formats for you, and then we'll get into some expenditures related to administration, planning, zoning, finance, legislative branch, executive budget, economic development, as well as building maintenance. So kind of overview of administration primarily, and then in subsequent workshops we'll get into the other pieces as well, including public safety, fire department, etc. So some of the department heads are here tonight. Public Works was not able to join us. They have an emergency water leak over on Pine Street. It spans a couple of blocks of outages, so they're all addressing that. We've had some callbacks on that. But largely, department heads are here tonight to go over salaries and wages for the organization. As promised from last year, if you recall, there was a push to kind of reorganize our salaries and wages and come up with something that was more robust, if you will. And that was primarily a request from Councilmember Gibson at the time, as we went through debating whether we do COLAs or across-the-board raises or whatever that looked like. So we've taken some time, massaged some philosophies throughout each department to figure out where to go, and we have a comprehensive salaries and wages plan that I think will serve the organization well into the future as well as today. It's easily navigated, and overall, I think it's a decent package for an organization of our size. So, of course, when you do something like this, you find discrepancies in pay between positions that do similar work. For example, two administrative positions in different departments may do similar work, have similar roles and responsibilities, but they're not paid the same based on the needs of that or budget constraints of that specific department. We've equalized that, so it's equal pay for equal work. We did a similar realignment, if you will, back in 2014. I think Ms. Holcomb can recall when we did some of that. And that was more gender-based because we had a disparity between genders in our pay scales. This is kind of correcting a couple of disparities between equal pay, you know, for equal work. So we'll delve into that as we move about the evening here, and I have some handouts for you. So just to, as a quick review, I keep these slides handy because we review them every so often. Our purpose of our budget, of course, is for the citizens. It gives them a picture of how we're operating and what our intentions are for the year, right? It's kind of our roadmap. For you folks in the town council, it serves as a policy tool and an expression of your goals and objectives. Remember, we like to hear from the council at the, if you will, 30 to 40,000 foot level, where you're driving the policy and you're saying, here are our priorities in a philosophical way that we want money for our organization to be spent. And then for the management, it's used for us as an operating guide and control mechanism to make sure that we're living within our means as an organization, but then also carrying out the policy that the town council and our constituents have mandated upon us, so to speak. So this slide isn't new for some of you. Some of you it is new. It's zero-based budgeting principles. I apologize it's not as viewable on the screen, but just to give you kind of an overview of what zero-based budgeting is and a review, remember that zero-based budgets are not connected to prior year's spending. So a couple of years ago in 2018, we revamped the budget and we took prior spending away from every department. We basically made it invisible and said, you have to justify everything you spend from zero up. So they all got worksheets. They had to list everything they plan to spend in that object or in that line item in order to help us bring us back to make sure whatever spending we were using wasn't out of control spending. It wasn't inflated because we had at one time we got into the habit of just saying, well, let's just add 3% to the streets budget and that'll cover us for the year. The next year it was, well, let's just add 3% and that'll cover us for the year. And then your expenses inflate so far that it's not affordable. So that was one principle we deployed. The budget for zero-based budgeting, as we tie it into performance-based budgeting, as you've heard us discuss, budgets are tied to specific activities and levels of service. So we're not talking necessarily about how many reams of paper that the office uses. We're talking about what do those reams of paper do for us. We're not talking about the number of smoke detectors or the amount of money it takes to put smoke detectors in a handful of houses in our community for fire prevention. We're talking about the goal to reduce home fires in our community or to reduce fire-related injuries because we don't have some families don't have smoke detectors. So we're on outcome-based goals, and we're looking for pieces that we can statistically track. Spending increases or cuts are not simply spread evenly across the budgets. This describes it the best way is it eliminates the common sandbag gig or practice in budgeting process where we build. It requires a bit more work to analyze and prioritize activities and expenditures. Lastly, then, funding is targeted to more activities that align with our strategy. And we're going to get into a little bit of our strategy based on the workshop that we held with council. Mr. Vick and Ms. Devlin were able to attend in January, where we talked about strategic planning. So I have a handout to give you there. And then the agenda, of course, talks about what tonight's goals are for us. Review, we're going to get more into revenues and our cash position, because our cash position is obviously a bit in flux as last year or the last minute bills come in. We'll get advice from council to balance the general fund budget. That's where a lot of our energy is spent, is in balancing the general fund budget. We'll review the expenditures we've previously described. Remember that appropriation control is exercised at the budget level and not necessarily at the object expenditure level. So you're not going to see a lot of details on what we're spending in specific objects, although you'll see those objects categorized together like we've done in the past. And then we want your big picture goals. We want to hear your feedback. So as we move into the rest of the workshops, which we're doing quite aggressively, as you've noticed, we can incorporate that feedback into those workshops and into those budgets as we hit those budgets through the workshopping. So I acknowledge that July 1st's goal of adopting the budget is quite ambitious and maybe rather optimistic, but we hope we can get as close as we can by that date so that we're not into, you know, the second half of the fiscal year trying to get a budget adopted. So with that, what I do want to throw up on the screen is a fund structure. I would like to just give you some basis first before we get into the nuts and bolts of the budget. Oh, it's not up there. What? Well, that's no bueno. How does that work? Excuse us.
That doesn't make sense.
Oh. PowerPoint.
You have to project it, right? Turn it on.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. We didn't see that coming.
It's projecting PowerPoint.
PowerPoint. Ah, watch this. Here, I'll just drag it over there. Here it goes. All right. But don't worry if you can't see it, because I have a handout. Sorry. Okay, and just for in full disclosure, as a housekeeping measure, if it's okay with everyone, I'd like to try to get these wrapped up by 9 o'clock. I think a couple hours is plenty to delve into it, and if there's something we need to roll into the next workshop, then we'll do that. I mean, we may have to start a couple of workshops earlier than scheduled in order to keep up with the workload. So please just communicate if there's an expectation or there's something we're missing. Just please communicate that with us. Okay, so what I've done on this worksheet here is kind of outlined as many of the funds as we could and in the structure. This relates more or less to the question, and we built this, Robert and I put this together before COVID-19. I think it was back in like February, in anticipation of having budget workshops, where we grouped the funds together based on what we call the BARS chart of accounts. But this is supposed to answer the question as to how do we move money around? How do we do that? So we have what we call governmental funds, and those funds, if you paid attention to the coding of those on your worksheets, those are fund like Fund 1000 is the general fund, 2250 is planning, so on and so forth. Those are governmental funds. They include lighting districts in our building code, and they have some sort of they can have some sort of tax revenue, or they can be fee supported. So they're kind of a hybrid between tax revenues and fees. Okay. And you'll see the red arrow goes across the top of the purple box, and the green arrow goes across the left-hand side there. What those represent is, within, for example, the general fund, you'll see a number of accounts, right? Executive services, administration, legal, all of those. Up and down within that light box, we can move appropriation authority. However, we can't move appropriations between the general fund and any other governmental fund. The funds have to stay within those funds without, I guess the exception to that is if council authorizes it under certain circumstances and it's allowed by law. But generally speaking, you can't move them across. You can only move money up and down. Okay. And when we say move funding or we move money, in these terms, we're speaking appropriation spending authority, okay, not actual cash, although cash applies. Same thing with capital improvement funds, which are in the 4000 series. So we can move money within a fund, but we cannot move money across funds, and not every fund is a department. Until you get into like the water and sewer funds, right? Those are fee-based only. We don't use taxes to support those operations. But
it was just ironic. Every time you'd look down, Bob would raise his hand.
Oh.
So the question I have, Brandon, is, so if I hear this right, the green would be moving up and down. You can move it within that, correct?
Correct, within that block.
So if you're moving money within that block and the green up and down arrow, they don't require a budget amendment.
Correct.
But across in the red, they do.
Correct.
Gotcha.
Yep. And then within, so to back up a little bit, you see the light circle around the general fund and those dark blue boxes. We can move that money up and down, right? We can't go outside of the box without a budget amendment either. Meaning if we go over whatever bottom line you set for the general fund as the council, then we need a budget amendment, which is why you see us, one example was the lighting districts last year. We underestimated what we were going to spend on lighting, and so when we overspent, we had to come back to council and say, look, we missed the mark, we need spending authority to maintain compliance. So, you know, otherwise that results in an audit finding that says you spent more than what your council said you could spend within this fund, and there a budget amendment didn't happen. Okay, so we like to make budget amendments happen so that we don't see audit findings. So then going back to enterprise funds, as we call them, Chief?
What's the problem with an audit finding? How does that negatively affect the town?
It negatively affects us in a number of ways. Primarily, when bondholders review your performance as an organization, they don't like to see audit findings because they've invested in your organization. If you went for more bond funding, it affects your bondability. And the other piece that some legislation just came out with is, and Robert, correct me if I misspeak on this because it's relatively new and you've seen it. If we have two audit findings in a row, meaning we fail to correct an audit finding, a member of our populace could sue the city and demand, get a, you know, a writ mandamus saying that we have to comply with whatever that is. And so audit findings can range from not having a budget amendment done because you've exceeded your spending authority, or it could be not adopting your budget on time, it could be not having your audit on time, or your AFR. Those are some examples.
So it really behooves us to pay attention and get things spent accordingly, and if we have unforeseen, we got to make amendments.
Correct.
I'll give you an example. I just witnessed in January, went up to the with the Montana Aeronautics. Kalispell had some audit findings, and so they put it out right away. They weren't going to give any grants to Kalispell because of their findings, because they want that money to be misappropriated in some other place. And they mentioned that right up front so they didn't get any.
They did so publicly. So that's also another reason you want audit findings, right? Thanks for that question. So down into the black box then, same principles apply as the governmental funds. We don't mix box to box unless you appropriate that directly, meaning you can move governmental funds, and we've done this before where we've moved general fund money or cash in from the general fund into the capital improvement fund. So like I said, those types of maneuvers are allowed, but they're done by the council, specifically either through your budgeting process or by resolution or by a budget amendment. So that, and that's typically how our capital improvement fund is funded, is surplus transfers, when we have a surplus at the end of the year. So are there any questions on this sheet? Mr. Michelson.
On the second one, water, non-water sewer projects, sidewalks, CIP, fire department, those stay within their box, correct?
Correct. So that's kind of designated. We have three capital improvement funds right now. We have Fund 4000, which is our general capital improvements. We have the sidewalk improvements fund and the fire engine capital improvements fund. The water and sewer capital improvements live within the water and sewer funds. We leave those there, and when we do capital improvements, we spend them out of those funds directly rather than out of the general capital improvements fund. But we use Fund 4000 kind of as a piggy bank or as a savings account to put cash away so that when an expenditure such as a fire engine comes up, we have cash to do that. That's how it's been used in the past. Maybe a fire engine's not the best example because it has its own fund, but a street sweeper.
Police car.
Police cars are a perfect example. When we buy a police car, we pull it out of Fund 4000.
I see.
Any other questions from council? Or?
Sure. When you pull it out of, when you said when you have a police department, when you pull it out of the capital improvement fund,
mm-hmm.
That is out of, okay, I got it. I don't have to answer it. I figured it out.
You stare at it long enough, sometimes it makes sense. Sometimes you stare at it long enough, it makes worse. It's okay. We're
here. This is very simple to follow, and it makes good sense. Yeah. I like it.
Okay. So hopefully this answers some of that question. You know, when for example, you hear us say, well, you know, we had unspent reserves perhaps in the cemetery's budget and the police department needed to spend that on fuel. That's how that happens. This is because we stay within the bottom line of the general fund, but we communicate between the departments to make sure that things are covered. Another example which occurred was the fire department had significant salary savings this year. Because their personnel didn't work the full hours that were allocated. So he was able to reallocate some of that funding into maintenance and get some projects, maintenance projects done on some apparatus done ahead of schedule. And so that's how that happens. We document all of that through finance. So you'll see on your reports when we give you the expenditure versus actual report for the council meetings, you should see there's four columns, and you should see two columns. One's labeled original appropriation, and one's labeled current appropriation. The original appropriation is what you adopted in the budget. The current appropriation is something that we changed internally, and usually that's done by a department head filling out a form requesting a line item transfer of spending authority. But for example, if that department head was George and he came to the administration and he said, well, I'm not going to spend $3,000 in the water fund, and so what I'd really like to do is spend it someplace in the sewer fund, it'd be a no-go. We can't do that. But if there's something else he wants to spend it on in the water fund, we can make that work. So.
Okay, a good example is I was looking at the budget and actuals today, and the suppression part of the fire department is over.
Correct. And you'll see some of those. When you go through the actuals, you'll see some lines are in the negatives, and so some of those haven't been corrected, and some of those we just won't correct because we want to demonstrate we went over budget in those specific lines.
And that's the reason I brought that up, because what you just said, if you're putting money around within that, you're putting in the voids, like the attorney one.
Right.
Good example, what I asked him today, and he told me you took it out of the general.
Correct, because the attorney fees are out of the general fund.
So my stinking thinking is it's going to be hard to be anything over budget if you're always moving money around to fill in the voids.
Right, which is why we don't use it as a tool to fill in the voids. So if a department head came to me and said, well, I overspent on this, they don't have a logical justification, they just... For example, their utility bill is more, right? Their utility bills ran over. We're not going to correct things like that because we want to demonstrate that we under-budgeted for utilities. It's going to be case-by-case basis, but it's not used as a tool to make their budget look like they were spot on. Because the bottom line is, in this group, right, we're looking at their departmental budget, not necessarily their line item budget, right? So Robert and I are working on them on a daily basis to make sure their object lines are in line. But when we see that law enforcement services, for example, is approaching the end of their bottom line, then that's something you all are going to see. So
okay.
Any other questions on that structure? Groovy. Now I got to figure out how to pull this back over. And there it is. Okay. Real quick, and I apologize, I don't have this document on the screen. I don't have a lot of them. But most of the staff has seen this. So when we did our mini strategic planning session in January, we put our thinking caps on and came out with some... you guys share. You haven't seen it, but everybody else has. And I'll keep showing this to you when I'm done with it. We talked about vision. We talked about strategies. We talked about where is the organization heading and what do we want to see us accomplish over the coming years. And so this is available online at StevensvilleFirst.org, as well as the mayor's category of the website. For you to review in more depth if you'd like, but I wanted to give you a copy of it. Basically, we're evolving this into a strategic plan for the organization for the next foreseeable future. We're still working through this as we have available resources, but the attempt of this page is to kind of encapsulate what we discussed at that January session and then even since then. The vision, essentially, for Stevensville is a safe, diverse, resilient, and sustainable and growing town known for its rich heritage, historic significance, natural beauty, economic prosperity, and exceptional quality of life for all. So while it's a mouthful, when we reviewed this at our most recent staff workshop, we felt it spoke to the spirit of our community and the expectations of our organization. So as we move through the budget process, I just ask that you keep these in mind, and if you have additions or subtractions or feedback on this piece of paper, I'd love to hear it. But it kind of highlights four key initiatives, so that when a department head brings a budget request forward to either myself or the town council, you can ask the simple question, how does this tie back into our four key initiatives? You know, how does this tie into creating a safe and healthy community? Or how is this tying into innovative infrastructure? How is this a sustainable financial or a responsible financial decision for our organization? And so then the burden of performance is back on that department to make sure that every dollar we're spending wisely. So I just wanted to share that with you, just so you had an idea of some philosophy behind the budget, and like I said, I'd welcome your feedback there. So with that, what I'd like to do is just dive right into salaries and wages, and then we'll get into some of the funds specifically. So I will, yeah, do you mind? Yeah, there should be enough for everybody. There's 10 copies. Yeah, we'll fill those up on the board. Which one do you want? Should I go through? Let's go through the matrix first, and then we'll go through.
Okay, that's the spreadsheet. So I have a PowerPoint with this. Which
okay. Okay. So, but you don't have this matrix on there, right? Okay. So what I'm going to do is drag this. We'll go through the matrix first, and then Robert's got some numbers and figures for you to kind of review. Okay, so as I mentioned when we started, we had a conversation about what does pay look like across the organization, and what adjustments are needed, how does it look like, what does it look like going through to the future. So this primarily started in the police department, because we all acknowledged that there was somewhat of a disparity in the amount of money we were paying our police officers compared to other communities. We were really struggling with recruitment and retention in that regard. And so that's where this conversation really started, and then it kind of snowballed into, crap, we're out of line everywhere. We're having a hard time recruiting for key positions in our organization because our pay is out of line with the rest of the market. But also there were disparities between positions. So each department has a matrix throughout this document. You'll notice that not every department looks the same. So in terms, you know, most departments have an entry-level, midpoint, and maximum schedule, while police and public works are based on years of service, and theirs go into the 30-year mark. What we did is we'll just kind of go through these one at a time, I suppose. For administration, and mind you, at least on this chart, you'll see positions that maybe don't exist, okay? But we wanted a pay rate for them. So, for example, at one time we had an administrative assistant that worked half-time in the administrative office that was split with the fire department. In the last budget, we removed that part-time position, and that person only worked in the fire department. Depending on what's going on in the office, we may propose at some point down the road, we're not necessarily proposing it in this budget, that another administrative assistant be hired. The level of work that person's expected to do could vary between an administrative assistant one and administrative assistant two, and that's distinguished in their position descriptions. Okay, so not necessarily on this chart, but their position description would outline what level of responsibility and workload that they're expected to take on. And then the deputy clerk is typically our utility billing specialist as well, and then our town clerk and finance officer. So these aren't necessarily listed in level, they're actually more or less listed in level of highest lowest paid to highest paid, but not necessarily promotional level, okay? So just so we're clear on that. The adjustments then for service between 1 to 10 years, we're looking at a 1.5% increase. Service 11 to 20 years would be a 1% increase annually, and then a 0.75% increase for 21 years to 30 years. We don't address over 30 years because that's extremely rare, but we appreciate if there's some feedback there if you want to see us project out to 35 years, or they just freeze at 30 years and that's just what it is. That's what we'd like to hear. So I guess something, a takeaway from this or a point we want to highlight is that someone can, we would use this pay matrix when we hire someone. Okay, when someone comes on board, we'd evaluate their application and their interview and all of the application materials to determine where they fall. For example, if we're hiring a finance officer, because the one that typed this can't spell. Which isn't, it's not you, it's me. It really wasn't Robert that did it. But if we were looking for a finance officer, we would take that person's experience and what they can bring to the organization, and we'd see if it's an entry-level hire, or if it's a midpoint hire, or a maximum hire, meaning they're at the top of experience. Maybe they bring a CPA and three master's degrees and a bachelor in finance, or whatever the case is. Then, of course, we'd probably pay closer to the high point. Or we'd go more entry level, the giggle brigade over here. And so that's the rationale. When we have a new hire that we don't anticipate, we would we'd budget. For example, we are budgeting for another police officer because we didn't get one. We didn't get the full force hired in the last fiscal year. We're going to kind of take an average and say, okay, well, we're going to budget just in case we get a lateral transfer, but if we get an entry level, then we'll have a little bit of wiggle room. So we have a little bit of play when we budget, and we do that on purpose so that they fit into this philosophy a little bit.
Brandon?
Yes.
I was talking to James earlier today in his office about the matrix.
Mm-hmm.
So according to his matrix, doesn't that differ a little from what he just said?
Yeah, when we get to the police department, I'll speak to
that. Oh, okay. All right.
So if we jump then over to our community development division and we go into the building inspection and building official, the same thing applies to building inspectors 1, 2, and 3. Those aren't necessarily individual people, but that could be that they come with one certification, or they come with two certifications, or they come with every certification, right? Because they're certification-based in their field. So that's also delineated in the position descriptions for some of these positions, okay? And likewise, we have the same entry level, midpoint, and maximum as well.
So do we currently have just two part-time building inspectors then?
Correct.
And not a building official?
We have an individual who's working towards his building official certification. So he's qualified as a building official, but he doesn't have that formal certification. So he's working towards that. That decision to do that plays into the marketability of this organization. We advertised for a building official. Dennis Monroe reached out to a number of his contacts, and we could not get a building official to come to this community for part-time status. We had a couple apply from Florida and Texas looking for full-time and six figures a year, but that was not feasible for this organization for obvious reasons. So we opted to find the next best thing, someone who had every certification they could get but didn't quite have building official certification, so they're working towards that. So. And I have found in my research of other communities that the council may want to consider revising its ordinance where it requires a certified building official, because a number of communities aren't requiring certification. They're more or less just asking for some sort of a qualification in the position description, but they're not necessarily requiring certification. So if they have the knowledge base and the skill set to make determinations as a building official, they don't necessarily have to do inspections. because that's why you hire inspectors in the first place. That may be something that the town council addresses down the road. So one thing you would notice if you looked at the court clerk wages compared to like an administrative assistant two is that those wages align and are exactly the same. We expect that a court clerk would perform the same work as an administrative assistant two, just call it a different title for formality reasons. And the same applies to the fire department. Parks and Recreation, overall, we've taken survey, if you will, or poll of other communities to see what they're paying their staff. We of course can't pay what a lot of the larger municipalities are paying. You'll learn that in the police section of this. But we try to, for our size and desirability to want to be here, we try to do our best to get there. So that's the pay scale we're suggesting there. And then we get into the police department. And I know that a couple of council members have already met with Chief Marble, and you saw the color-coded, very elaborate pay matrix. When it came time to implement that and put it into the budget, we realized very quickly how expensive that could get for us because it was getting, and this is already getting somewhat expensive. And so the other piece or the other rationale behind simplifying what you saw from Chief Marble to what this is today was that we'd rather see those certifications that he highlighted incorporated into the position description for those personnel rather than making their pay contingent on that certification completely. So we backed off on the highlight of certifications and more or less went with a years of service and then incorporate those certs into their position descriptions as those positions come forward. The one modification you would see to this chart is that we would divide police officers into police officer one and police officer two because those do have different certifications, meaning they have a basic certificate, and then a police officer two can have an intermediate or advanced certificate. And so we'd like to accommodate that and incorporate that into a second or second police officer rank, if you will. So, Mr. Vick.
Is there any plan to have like a bump in pay for if any of them hold a EMS license?
No, because it's never been asked. But I suppose it's something we would entertain.
Okay.
Sure.
So, Nancy and I did talk about that and had a chance to discuss with Brandon. But ideally, so if you know, theoretically here, we, not all of us, but a few of us have talked about the different levels of certification, right? I mean, it's similar to public works, you know, water, sewer, having advanced levels of certification. You know, the advanced levels of certification for law enforcement are essentially advances in training specific to the discipline that you serve in. So, you know, police patrolmen, maybe they get their instructor certificate and they become a taser instructor. They become an instructor in PVOC, which is patrol vehicle operations and, you know, just different stuff like that. It's an advantage to us to have well-trained police officers and have officers that have advances in their area of expertise. So if we look at just the police officer entry level, in my mind, that's what a police officer would be. Okay, somebody who maybe hasn't been through basic yet, or they just, you know, they completed basic, but they don't have their basic certificate yet, because you have to serve for a year in order to get your basic certificate. So a police officer one would be, just a general police officer would be somebody that has a basic certificate, that type of thing. Police officer one would be intermediate certificate, which you have to serve for 4 years, plus have 200 hours of professional development training in order to achieve that. Police officer two would be, of course, the advanced certification, and that's, you have to have 8 years of service plus 400 hours of advanced professional development training. So, you know, having those things in place, it gives them something to strive for, and I think it's an incentive. And we'll talk more about that when we can meet Jane and Robin, you know, to discuss that. But Robin, so you talked about that a little bit today. What I think is really important, especially with this regards to this pay matrix, and if you see under the corporal status, you can't even become a police corporal until you've had, you know, over 4 years, and according to this matrix. That makes sense. Somebody that's serving in the capacity of a corporal is going to be performing the duties of a field training officer. They are going to be the person who is essentially the OIC, officer in charge, when, you know, the chief is not available. I mean, we need to have somebody like that. You know, if I'm on vacation or I retire in the middle of the night tomorrow or something, I'm just kidding. It's going to be something where they they have the ability to step in and serve in that capacity and make some administrative decisions that are congruent with their level of training. So, for example, somebody that is going to serve as a corporal should at least have their intermediate certificate, okay? And they should have gone through at least first-line supervisor training, which is essentially kind of where you go if you're aspiring to be a sergeant. So that at least if they have that week-long school to say, okay, you know, here's how you function in the administrative capacity as a first-line supervisor. You know, when you get into sergeant and above, you know, chief, you need mid-level management, executive management courses that you take. Incidentally, you know, I'm just starting my 22nd year. I have every certificate you can have in law enforcement right now, with the exception of SWAT, but instructor, all of that stuff, plus college degree. So, you know, if you look over on the chief side, we don't have a sergeant. We're not looking at one right now, so I'm kind of skipping over that. But if you look on the chief side, and have somebody that has some time in and that can serve in that capacity, that either has or can obtain those advanced levels of certification and go to the, you know, month-long school. The one that I went to is the Executive Command College, put on by the FBI. And, you know, those types of advanced level classes are why you see the commensurate pay for the advances. So what Brendan is saying, instead of laying out the matrix with all of those certifications across the board, he's saying, let's build those certifications into each hierarchical position within the organization. So, you know, and that does make sense. Yeah, to add them to the job descriptions.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be a corporal, you need to be eligible for or possess your intermediate certificate, let's say. Okay, and that would be built into the job description for corporal FTO. Sergeant, you know, kind of same deal. Chief, you have to have your command or supervisory certification or be eligible to receive that in order to serve as the police chief, that kind of stuff. So this makes sense. If you saw on the matrix that I did originally, it was based on annual longevity, and we went away from that. You know, there were some discussions that were had in council meetings. Specifically, Steve brought that up. And Bob, you and I talked about that a little bit too, how you liked it where it was, you know, 4 year increments, and once you got up to 15 years, it advanced by 5 year increments. So, but what Brandon did is he broke it down to say, okay, essentially we're going to look at that same thing, but it's going to be a smaller incremental steps throughout the years of service. And incidentally, if somebody comes to us, let's say as an entry-level police officer, or I guess a technical entry-level, but they come to us and they have, you know, like Tommy did, he came to us with 20 years of service, okay? He's not going to start out at entry-level 1836 an hour. He's going to start out at, you know, 2354 an hour. And, you know, of course, if he has his intermediate or advanced certifications, that might look different there too. But you want to pay for that type of experience. You know, I mean, we weren't able to keep him here And I don't blame him for going someplace else. This is just an example. He left here because he had an opportunity to perform investigations at the state level, which he's exceptional at. I mean, the guy knows his stuff when it comes to being a detective. So he had an opportunity to take a detective's role solely and not be serving him as a police patrolman or something like that. So if we get somebody like that, we should pay to retain them. I mean, that's kind of the name of the game. You want somebody with experience, and you want to keep them around, you got to pay them for it. So this gives us an opportunity to be able to do exactly that. Generally speaking, we're not seeing a lot of people come in with a lot of years of service. We got John, he's got 5 years in Florida. He came to us from Florida, from Lakeland. And so he's got a lot of transferable skills, you know. So we should be looking to pay that. Incidentally, what I'm looking at as far as he goes, you know, we do have him serving the capacity of an FTO right now and not being compensated for it. He understands he's doing that voluntarily because he's wanting the experience. He is certified to be an FTO, field training officer. But I would like to get him as soon as possible to that mark, that 2112 mark, as a corporal, and give him that designation as the corporal and essentially OIC FTO. So if we can build this, I mean, that's the idea. That's the name of the game. I think when we're sitting down addressing, you know, how we're going to deal with the issue of retention, this is a huge step. We've got to do something to be competitive. I mean, you know, take home cars, that's another huge thing for these guys. And they would tell you that. I mean, that's a big deal. When they don't have to use their gas money to come to work, you know, regardless of where they live. Yeah, ideally, if we can have them live here in town, that would be great. You know, and we push for that whenever we can. And incidentally, if you have a chief at some point when I'm hanging up, you really should get them to be living in town. I don't subscribe to the philosophy of having a chief that lives outside of town.
Is it not in town limits?
I don't think it is, but I mean, as much as you possibly can, or even on the outskirts, but, you know, ability to interact with people, that's kind of conceptually the whole idea with community oriented police. So,
don't they have to have a 15 or 20 minute call?
Yeah, their response time has to be considered within reasonable limits, and that's, so we're not, state law allows for us to waive residency requirements, but they don't suggest it. Somebody that applies to be a police officer by Montana code has to live in the state for a year and in the county in which they intend to serve as a police officer for 6 months prior to appointment. Now, the mayor can waive the residency requirements, but, you know, I mean, that if we got somebody that's living, you know, let's say in Missoula or something like that, how much are they really going to be ingrained in our community? How much are they going to be, you know, that's why that law came to be. It's incentive to say, hey, we really need to look at getting some local people or have people that want to move into the area. So
it's hard to build an identity if you don't live in town.
Yeah, and yeah, you get to know the people. You know, you go to the grocery store and you're, I mean, honestly, and I don't want to get too much into politics, but I sent an email today to the police chief in Bozeman, who is the representative on our chief's association for the state of Montana right now. And Senator Tester reached out to him and said, hey, what do you think about everything that's going on? Give me some feedback. I think more communities would be served better by having law enforcement officers who are paid decent, okay, I know it's a little bit harder to attain that, who are paid decent, but also encouraged to live and work amongst the people that they serve. And the reason why is because in rural policing, I mean, it's inherent. You become a master at community-oriented policing because you know everybody, oftentimes on a first-name basis, that you're dealing with, you know? And how effective are you when you just roll into town and you don't have that one-on-one connection with somebody who knows you, who knows all about you, knows your family, different stuff like that, versus somebody else? I mean, I can speak from experience. There have been so many times I've de-escalated situations because I showed up And I have that personal connection with that person, not only because I've been here for 16 plus years, but because I live and work in the community that I'm in. You know, that's a huge, huge thing. So when we're looking at how we're going to retain people and what we really need to do philosophically for this police department, that's what we need to be looking at. How can we get people here who can afford to put food on the table for their family, afford to potentially buy a house in this town, you know, or if they've got a rent, we're paying them enough to be able to rent. That most people have two income families now. That's just the way it is. It never used to be that way, but it is what it is. So we've just got to really look at that. Are we being competitive enough to keep people around? And I think if we really look at how this is laid out, considering our populace, you know, per capita, and what we are paying for police officers, I think this is pretty reasonable. Whether we're going to pay COLA or not, I don't know. I mean, that discussion remains to be seen. But this is essentially a COLA structure based on longevity. So if we don't do COLA, at least we're still getting, you know, the bump every year, if that makes sense.
The chief brings up a good point about COLA. So the way that we've designed these is so that all these numbers tie in with each other, at least in each column. So if the council authorizes a cost of living allowance of 2% in any given year, and maybe that's not every year, but whatever year it is, you authorize that. We adjust the base pay for that position at 2% and let it do its, we let the formulas do the work from there on. And by the time you hit the bottom of this of the chart, you're still really close to 2%. We're actually maybe saving like tenths of pennies. But that's kind of how it's designed, so that when you update or when you grant a COLA, we update all the charts so that everything comes up, rather than leaving the chart alone and just applying it to the people, and then you go out and try to recruit for a position, but the wage rate was what you paid 3 years ago, and you've had five COLAs or whatever it is since then, you know, 5% worth of COLAs, you're out of whack, right? So that's part of the rationale behind why we developed this.
When the state and the federal government grants COLAs, does that apply to these two?
So the state and local federal governments, they'll set, I mean, it depends on the organization, but I think that they'll usually, like the federal government will release, here's what the COLA is for federal. Here's what the COLA is for the state. In fact, MMIA comes up with a COLA themselves that they give municipalities, and it's usually considerably higher than what the feds will give a COLA for. If they grant a COLA, it doesn't mandate that all local governments mandate a COLA as well. It's your option. So in this fiscal year, because we're adjusting and almost every single employee is seeing a increase of some kind, as a result of this chart, we're suggesting that we forgo a COLA this year and not do a COLA. Just because implementing something like this is already becoming an expensive venture. It's a warranted venture. It needs to happen, but it's also hard to do that and then slap a 1.5% to 3% COLA on top of it. That's when you're talking nearly $1 million in wages. That's it'll hit, right? So that's part of our background. Ms. Holcomb?
And we're hoping we could keep police officers at what you have here, right? Because I know this has been a huge topic ever since I've been on council, is trying to keep the police officers in this town.
You know, I mean, Robin, perfect world, I would like to see those numbers increase. But I'd like to see us start out at $21.12 an hour for entry level. But are we going to be able to do that right now? I don't know. I mean, we do need to be proactive, and we do need to take those things into consideration. But we've got to start somewhere, and I think we've never had a pay matrix before. It's just been kind of haphazard and hit and miss, and you know, somebody comes along and says, hey, I'm worth more than this. I want to get this pay. And then we have to sit there and say, okay, well, I think we can do that, maybe we can do that. There's a, and you end up with a disparity. You end up with somebody who's made a good argument, or maybe, you know, sold themselves in such a way that, oh yeah, we can pay to have this person. I think we got to get away from that. And I wasn't a big fan of the old, and you got to dig deep way back. Robin, you're probably the only one that remembers. Brandon, I know you do too. But the old system that we have had a step and grade, and it was archaic, and it was based on benchmarks, and you had to follow the benchmark evaluation guide. You remember all that?
Mm-hmm.
This makes more sense, and especially since this is essentially a living document. You know, you plug a number in, and it changes everything else, like the one that I created was. This gives us an opportunity to address those things. And across the board, by addressing that base wage to make it competitive to whatever it is. Now, 1836 in this valley, yeah, it's a little bit low, but can somebody make it at that? I think that they can.
To give you an idea of where, because this exact format was brought over from Missoula's, and when we changed the numbers, we noticed that largely our numbers are about $10 an hour lower than what they're paying. Of course, they're a much larger organization, and they have so much more resources. But to give you an idea of the marketability of where we are in a region, a large municipality like Missoula is paying $10 an hour more than what we're able to pay.
And our budget can handle this.
We're going to get there.
Okay. I mean, the only reason why I ask is because even the entry level and my job isn't like this one, and they only make $1.50 more than what I make an hour now.
Right.
And they're getting shot at.
Yeah. And they're getting shot at.
Yeah.
Well, and in this day and age, and I'll be completely blunt here, with what's going on in this country right now with law enforcement,
it's scary.
We're not getting people to apply.
No.
Nobody wants to do this job right now.
I mean, part of the push, and the really heavy push, and even during COVID, you saw us bring this subject up. We have two police officers currently employed with us that were hired within
4 months of each other.
4 months of each other. One brings 4 years of experience to us, 5 to 6 years of experience. One year brings 6 years of experience on a large metro force, and the other just barely turned 21 years old.
Of one in the academy right now.
One in the academy. Mm-hmm. Today they make the exact same wage.
But with this type of pay matrix.
Right.
And like he
and the reason
said,
for that is because we didn't have this set up. We were going off the old spreadsheet that we throw up on the whiteboard at city council meetings and say, here, adopt wages. And then we realized after that, and we hired people in sequence, we went, oh crap. We didn't think about a lateral transfer. We just assumed the only people who were going to apply for these positions were brand new people. Well, it backfired. Luckily, we've been able to accommodate this person in other ways, but still, they're accepting greater responsibility in their job as an FTO, but they're sitting next to this guy in the car training him, and he's making the same amount of money.
No.
This doesn't seem fair.
One of the things, and I don't want to take too long, so feel free to tell me to zip it.
You can have a minute.
I have a minute.
We only have an hour.
The thing, I think we can do better, but we would have to really get creative. And here's what I mean by that. Let's just say, and I'm not saying we should do this, I'm just throwing out there as a hypothetical. Let's just say the town decides to buy a fourplex or something in this community, okay? And we say, look, we can't pay you, we can pay you $1836 now. We know that that's tough for you to make ends meet. But here's what we'll do. We'll either do no rent or severely, you know, reduced rent at the city's own place. And you know, maybe somebody from the water department comes in and we can do the same thing there. Not only are we getting that person to live here, but we're offering a reduced rent, or, you know, whatever the case may be, reduce water, different things like that, in lieu of pay. Does it cost the town anything, really? Not really. Some maintenance on a rental unit, but that's about it. And you get the advantage of the person living here, things like that. Now, that's some outside-the-box stuff, But maybe that's where we need to start looking in order to retain people. Because I'll tell you what, if we advertise a police officer position at $18.36 an hour and Missoula's starting out at $27 an hour.
But okay, we're giving your first year of rent paid or reduced. Boy, that's a great way to save some money and yeah, maybe make it to that second year when you're pretty darn close to almost $19 an hour.
Yeah, or whatever the case
might be. Whatever it might be, yeah.
They're going to look at that and they're going to say, okay, you know what, I think I can do this because, you know, I'm not paying as much as I would pay in rent if I lived here or if I purchased a property, whatever the case may be. We realize that we're going to be essentially a training ground for places like Missoula and maybe even our county here. But if we really start thinking about how we can make this more attractive to work here, because I'll tell you, I mean, and you can talk to, I'm not tooting my own horn here, okay, but you can talk to numerous people that have left here and went on to better things. Josh Ray, perfect example. You know, I mean, the kid, he loved working here. He really did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of it is my philosophy of administration, but a lot of it is just the community, too. I mean, I think we can keep people here, but we've got to be able to pay them a living wage or make it, so you know, the environment such to where they can make it here. That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody's asking for, you know, the Taj. They just want to be able to live.
So with that addresses largely officer pay, and like I said, we before the budget is wrapped up, we're going to modify some columns here. But as a concept, we wanted to get this before you so that starting July 1, we can correct some of our wages. In the police force, then, I'd like to zoom this out, but it's not letting me. The civilian personnel in the police department, which right now includes a single person, which is the records clerk. That is paid according to other administrative positions in the organization as well, and is done based on the 1 to 10, 11 to 20, 21 to 30 as well. Over here, one thing we are going to remove is the extra $2 an hour for FTO. The chief's suggestion was if a corporal is designated as that FTO, then the wage that they're earning is adequate to compensate for what they're doing for training. So you'll see that disappear. But we are rewarding higher education, so if they possess an AA or a BA or a BS, we will compensate their hourly wage accordingly. So if it's an AA, they'd get 0.25%, and if it's a BA or an BS, we'd do 0.5% or 0.5% of their wages. So not half of their wages, but 0.5%.
Could you explain to me a little more in detail about the additional pay scale that you just talked about, the FTO, $2 an hour more while training?
We're going to remove that. Okay. That's not going to apply.
Well,
we're going to incorporate that into the corporals.
Yeah, I'd be training all the time.
And the idea there was that if they, you know, if an individual may not be field training all the time, they may only be field training, 13 weeks out of the year or whatever the case is. And so instead of paying them $2 an hour or more for 52 weeks, you would only be paying them while they train. But the chief thinks, because we are trying to bring more folks onto the force, that training is going to be more frequent and that the wage we're suggesting we pay a corporal adequately compensates that individual or the person in that position. So, further questions on that? Okay, well, the last piece to this is public works. Theirs is very straightforward. Much like the police department, we base it off of years of public works experience, and that's, of course, transferable, just as it is for the police department, from other organizations, but it is public works specific experience. Interestingly enough, the last, two or three public works personnel that we've hired, when we set their wage rate, we often just went back into the computer, found the guy that we replaced the person with, or we were replacing, and just used whatever we started them at. Well, that wasn't a fair way to do business either, and in fact, we just recently brought on an individual during the pandemic, who brought us 4 years of experience from two different municipalities in California. And his certifications, for the most part, with the exception, I think, of two water certifications, transferred over to Montana from California. So we don't have to pay to train him for the, 2.5, 3 years it takes to get someone their wastewater and water certifications. And he even comes with heavy equipment operator training as well. I think it was his third day of work, he was out working the backhoe. So this addresses that, and we somewhat implemented this because we had a range established in the wages resolution that you adopted. We kind of had an idea as to where we could place him, and he happened to fit well into that. And so that's where you'll see Public Works Assistance 1, 2, and 3 divided out, and that's again based on some certifications. So a Public Works Assistant 1 would have very basic water and wastewater treatment qualifications. Public Works Assistant 2 is going to have the higher level water treatment qualifications and wastewater treatment qualifications. And then we add on a heavy equipment operator and some other qualifications for Public Works Assistant 3. So out of the three Public Works Assistants we have today, they all actually kind of fit in different places on this chart. So like I said, it's not one position. You may have three Public Works Assistants 3s or four Public Works Assistants 1s, whatever the case is. But we wanted to give an opportunity for promotion into the organization for those staff. Currently, we operate, supervision of the Public Works Department is done through the Public Works Supervisor, and that was established under the Cruz administration when Ed Sutherland retired and George Thomas took on responsibility of all the Public Works operations. But we do, and we're not suggesting we hire one at this time, but we did put in a Public Works Director so that down the road as the organization grew, you had an expectation as to what that position would be paid. So currently we're not seeking to employ a Public Works Director, but that position does exist down the road should we grow into it. But for right now, those functions are largely shared between myself and the Public Works Supervisor. Mr. Michelson.
How does the rates of pay for these Public Works compare to like Hamilton and Missoula?
They don't. Right.
I think they're also like that $8 to $10.
The hard thing, and the same thing applies to the police officers when you compare things to Missoula, because just about every employee, with the exception of management and personnel that work in administration, almost everyone's unioned. And apparently, as in what my research has reflected, is that water and wastewater operator unions are very strong in negotiating their contracts. And so those wages are challenging to compete with. Mm-hmm. I think that when you get into the Public Works Assistant 3s, you're getting closer, but honestly, a lot of those positions are starting folks. What did Missoula start Jeff at? Do we remember?
$9 raise.
So when Jeff Hale moved on from this organization, he immediately received a $9 raise.
Yeah, and then he's making like $24, $25 an hour, right?
Wow. Yeah, again, it's a union position. But, you know, for the size of our... Yeah. And we shouldn't necessarily try to. We just stay in the market of small communities. Mm-hmm. And in the market of small communities, we think that these wages are competitive. We try to stay a little bit more competitive because of our proximity to Missoula and Hamilton. It's easy to say, well, if I can live in Hamilton and commute to Missoula or commute to Stevensville or vice versa, maybe I want to move to Stevensville, get my feet wet in Public Works, and then move on to Hamilton. We accept that a little bit, but by providing an opportunity for folks to move through a system and earn some more responsibility, earn some more certifications, we're hoping that we can start grooming some folks into leadership positions in the organization so that as folks retire through, we have a backup plan. So that's part of the rationale there. So it's not perfect, but it's a start. It's better than what we had yesterday.
I know we're talking about more money and everything here, but every report and every news article that I've heard because of this COVID is severely affecting our local state and local municipal governments. I mean, are we looking forward ahead to maybe loss of some revenue? I mean, we can't predict it. It's a crystal ball, of course. Right now, it probably looks great, but I mean,
our
6 months or a year from now, when the crap does hit?
Our revenue volatility kind of ties into property tax. Not as critical. I mean, the only time that property tax is going to be affected is if A, people don't pay their taxes because they can't afford it, or B, property values decrease because of vacant buildings, right? Businesses go out, they don't pay their taxes, property values decrease. It'll take about 18 months before we feel the hit for that. The other one is in income taxes, because people aren't working, they're not paying income tax. We'll see income taxes that are paid to the state decrease. And we've not received firm guidance from local government services or Department of Revenue as to how we should anticipate those impacts. So
obviously, the gas taxes are going to be much this year because nobody's driving.
Right.
Yeah.
So, are there any questions on wages and salaries? Because what I'd like to finish up before we get into revenues and the remainder of our expenditures and our time left here tonight is what the impact is to implement this. Because I'm sure you're just dying to know how much this is going to cost. Right? Okay. It's going to cost some money, but it's manageable. Where's the pool? Oh, I'll come over here. Sorry, guys. This dual screen thing is really screwing with me. I wonder if I move this over here, if that would be easier. Okay. You want this on PowerPoint, right, Robert?
I'm just handing these out to you.
Yeah, go ahead and hand those out and we'll get us started.
I did this right before I came over here, so I still have got to talk with the mayor about some of the hour amounts and stuff like that, but you'll see that I incorporated, let me look at my own handout. So some of these numbers on the bottom changed a little bit. So I took what he wanted for the numbers for wage increases, and so you have 2020, 1920, and 2021 on the right. The difference, one of the difference between the 2 years, we added 24 hours to each person's hourly amount from 2022, because there's when we have holiday pay, when someone doesn't work it, they still get paid it. That's just in our budget, so we don't account for that before. So someone could theoretically get over 40 hours in a week just for a holiday, like Glenn, who would never work on a Monday, so every one of his holidays is an extra payday, extra full day, and we didn't account for that before. But we did have savings. And then we had an increase of about $6,600 in our insurance for the employees. That's incorporated. So inside with the benefits, that incorporates everything they have. That is Social Security we pay, Medicare, unemployment, work comp, and PERS portion too. As you see I based the lifeguards on a one person at that rate per year, which would give us four, you know, because they're here for 3 months type of thing. I didn't change Bobby's description either.
Is he even up there?
Oh, yeah, because I took it.
Oh, there he is. Oh,
I didn't realize it until I got here, yeah. And this includes, I don't think it takes in a new position, so it does administration.
And there are, I think, at least throughout the parks, those wages didn't fully get adjusted compared to the thing.
No, yeah, on the bottom there.
Right. So I guess, you know, if you take the difference between $830,977 and the $927, it gives you a ballpark of what this takes to implement. I can tell you, we went ahead and we got everything entered into budget prep, and we'll pass those documents out soon. But I guess to give you a picture of how it impacted the general fund, right now is if I printed out the you'll see in the reports tonight, the general fund is about $60,000 short of meeting revenues over expenditures, meaning we're $60,000 short in revenue to break even. That's not that bad, because if you remember, I think it was probably 2 years ago, I came to you and said we're $200,000 short. Remember that? Yeah. So while we are $60,000 short, we need to go back through and comb through, and we're going to do that through workshops, of course, but we're going to go back through, comb through some things, and make sure that things are allocated correctly, expenses are accurate. And then identify any one-time purchases that would otherwise be spending cash. So if you remember, last year's general fund did not balance. I think we spent just shy of $100,000 in cash, knowing we had one-time expenditures in the general fund budget that we wouldn't have going forward. So that's one thing to consider when I tell you there's a $60,000 deficit. There's cash there to cover it. We just don't know what one-time expenses we need to narrow down. That also incorporates, this difference also incorporates the adding of positions as well, right? So, for example, we transitioned from a pool manager position to a parks and recreation director on a seasonal basis. We're bringing that forward as a permanent position. Largely in response to COVID, that's what catalyzed this whole thing, was because we had some requirements from the governor's office. The expenses for the first year of some of that work, as well as any other COVID-related work we do throughout the organization, will be reimbursed by CARES. So CARES just released, what was it, Friday they did that? Friday or Thursday or Friday?
Yeah.
A whole bucket of money that we can apply for. And so we're pulling those applications together. That's unlikely.
It's usually, right now, I think what they're saying is if you apply, you receive.
It's right. It's designated. This is better than the FEMA money. Because the FEMA money is 75%. This CARES money is 100%. Mm-hmm. And it's designated. It's designated by the governor's office for local governments. So they're basically saying, turn your receipts in and we'll cut you a check. Mm-hmm. Based on the memo we've received from the League of Cities and Towns. So we're tracking all of that, of course, and you know, if it didn't come through, we do have reserves, because that's what reserves are for. They're for emergencies, and this is nothing short of that. But I guess when you see the difference in what the impact of implementing this wages schedule is, take into account that there's also a couple of new positions being incorporated as well.
Can we back up really quick?
You bet.
When you were talking about the $60,000, and keep in mind that there's cash to cover it, but we're going to go through and with a fine-tooth comb and one-time expenditure, can you?
Sure.
Sorry.
So we don't make a habit of spending down cash on expenses that occur every year.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's something in the budget that we would only pay for once in a while, maybe that is a software purchase that it has a high upfront cost and then annual maintenance fee. It's an acceptable practice, or has been for this organization, to spend cash down on that product and then cover the maintenance fee with your revenues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you were to put a new roof on your home,
right. Okay.
You would maybe use your savings to do that. You wouldn't necessarily use your paycheck to
sure.
do that. Or you maybe would use a combination of the two. So we're going to look through our budget, our general fund budget specifically, to find out where are those new roofs. We have a solid idea of where they are, because department heads requested certain items, of course.
Sure.
So we want to make sure those items aren't accidentally being allocated to the general fund when they should go to capital improvements.
Okay. That's where, okay.
But, right, so I guess when I say we're short $60,000 in revenue, that doesn't mean that we'll end the year $60,000 in the hole, okay? We've got ample reserves to cover any deficit if we need that.
Where are these reserves from?
Well, you always, every year we make a habit of leaving 30%, 30 to 40% of what we spend in expenditures in the general fund. We always carry a general fund balance of, what, roughly $250,000?
Yeah.
So that's what we call a reserve. We have $250,000 sitting in the general fund that is a reserve in case we don't get a tax check or a flood or, you know, something bad happens and we need to spend money now. We experienced a catastrophic failure of two fire engines. We'd be dipping into reserves to replace those. We wouldn't be trying to meet the revenues. We wouldn't be raising money. We'd hold some bake sales, but we wouldn't be using tax revenue necessarily to try to pay for them up front. Does that clarify?
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
So I think as we go through some of these numbers, you're going to see you know, what we're spending on personnel, and you'll be able to fine-tune exactly in your heads as to, okay, what are the impacts of these either new positions or the overall impact of the wages and salaries increase. The two places you can see wages and salaries, with the exception of Parks and Recreation because of the creation of a position that's moved from seasonal into full-time pending council's approval. Police department, you're going to see increases. Public works, you're going to see increases. And a little bit in administration. The administration increases don't hit so hard because they're spread across funds. But police and public works have more people. They have people, right? And so it affects more people, right? Of course. So that's questions on that? Start throwing numbers up.
As we move forward, Brandon, are we going to break it down like we did in years past on the percentage that comes out of different?
Yes, we can do that. We can.
Like Laura's wages, how many percentage out of water and sewer?
Yeah.
Blah, blah.
Yeah, we'll okay. We'll break down those allocations
okay.
So you can see.
Yeah,
so that you can see who's allocated to what specifically, and we may just use this spreadsheet to kind of extrapolate that.
Okay, can I interject?
No.
Please?
Sure.
Sorry, we asked for a second. Like, wait, what? So we also unfortunately had kind of a wrench thrown into the mix here today by the superintendent at the school, and he said that we're going to have a conversation tomorrow, but he said that he's looking at not funding the SRO. And that is...
That's big.
It is a big deal. You know, everybody wants to have a school resource officer up there, and they want to be a Stevensville police officer, and I don't necessarily disagree. But we also are needing to have officers on the street. I mean, that school, it's busy. It's a busy, busy place for the SRO. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of drug issues that need to be addressed. There's tobacco violations up there, left and right, with vape products and stuff. I'm gonna put you on the spot.
How big of a hit is that?
I'm
36,000.
36.
And my initial. And I don't know that we're going to talk about this, but my conversation with them was to say, why don't you fund that position 100%, and then we'll talk to the school. I don't know if that's going to happen. They may choose to go with the county, which alleviates a lot of the burden with the work product that we have to put out. Because I'll tell you, I mean, if we don't have an SRO up there and the county doesn't come in to fill that void, I'll be up at that school all the time. They'll be calling constantly. That's why we got the SRO in the first place. Well, that and, obviously safety and security at school with everything going on, with shootings and stuff. But that's something to keep in the back of your mind, that I don't know what's going to happen with that. I'll know more after meet with him tomorrow. But if they choose to pull out of the deal, they can. It's in the contract. They don't have to agree to it. But that does put us in a same position, too. It's not the fuck we appeared, but essentially that would be the... If you do fill that vacant position, that's not an NSRL per se. Just be aware of that. That's just a regular officer. So that extra $36,000 is kind of a big deal. And like I said, I really think that they should pay 100% of it just because even in the summertime, the NSRL usually goes to trainings, they take their vacation time, they do all kinds of stuff. We don't really, excuse me, get that much of a benefit from them during the summertime.
Okay, so that the SRO concept is something we'll further delve into during the public safety workshop, and as it develops from the school district's perspective. But I can tell you, at least from my philosophy, that if that position is no longer warranted at the school, or they're no longer willing to contract for the $36,000, then we'll make up the $36,000 someplace in our budget. It'll be very difficult to do, but we don't have much of a choice. We need that officer on the streets. So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, and hopefully we'll have more definitive answers when we get to the public safety portion of our budgeting. One last thing before we jump into the reports that I just passed out. We blew the paper budget, so we're done there. Kidding. We'll get to, this was for hourly employees, so let's try to show you honorariums. I am proposing an increase in honorariums this year, but it won't show up.
Just flip the
page
over.
Okay, it's on the back of the other page.
How about we just do it this way? Wow.
Yes.
Watch this. There we go. Push the buttons enough time, it'll work. So what I'm proposing is adjustments to honorariums across the board. All honorariums are adjusted to $250 a month, up from the $200 that volunteer staff were making and council members were $225, and proposing an increase to $1,700 a month for the mayor's office. City attorney is still contracted, and the city judge remains unchanged. She has not proposed an increase, and of course, we would never propose a decrease in those wages either. We're not allowed to; that's against the law. So, and she does fine work for us as well, of course. So that's contracted. So these numbers, including the numbers that you saw on the previous slide, are all incorporated into your budgets before you tonight. So. Bear that in mind. Allocations are allocated accordingly. In the last fiscal year, you reallocated the mayor's wages or salary to, remember, 80% general fund, 10 and 10 water sewer. That put an extreme... extreme isn't the right word to use. That allocated a substantial amount back into the general fund, where then other funds weren't paying their fair share of administration. So we redistributed to what we feel, and you'll see those allocations as we work through the budget process. And Robert will build that spreadsheet for you. But we did reallocate those out of water and sewer funds, so not so much of a burden is placed on water and sewer, but it's also not all in the general fund either. Building fund, for example, is paying their share of having an administrator, and any other, you know, airport fund, for example, or if they're seeing small, you know, 5% of the 20,400 we're projecting, it helps spread it out across many rather than just having a few foot the bill. So. The three reports I gave you then, and I don't have them available to show on the screen because, well, first off, I don't think it would be beneficial for you to try to read these numbers on these reports on that screen. So that's why we printed them for you. And so The first piece of paper I gave you is a summary of your appropriations by fund and object. And so it breaks it down by your funds. And then across the columns, it shows what we're spending on personal services, which is salaries and wages, your operating and maintenance, and then your any capital outlay. And I should just tell you now, capital outlay has a couple of department requests in it, but that's not finished because we're not to the capital workshop yet. So just know that that capital stuff is in flex a little bit. But the operating budgets are primarily complete and have been incorporated throughout. So that gives you a snapshot. Full disclosure, all of these reports are, of course, in draft form and subject to change tomorrow. So gives you an idea of where we are today. And as we move through these workshops and we hear your feedback, we make tweaks and changes, and so you may see updates to these as we move about. So let's just jump into revenue and give you kind of, you know, Mr. Michelson asked a very valid question. How does revenue change with the new age of COVID-19 in our community? And the other unique piece of revenue this year is that we're projecting revenue numbers without having a taxable valuation. Because we're anticipating trying to get a budget adopted before June or July 1st, right? And so those of you who've gone through the budgeting process with us go, what? How do we adopt a budget? We don't even have our taxable valuation. A number of other communities have been very successful in the practice. What they do is they budget obviously no more than what they collected this year. They make a sound guess as to what they are going to bring in terms of tax revenue, entitlement share, those types of things we see, especially in the general fund. We make a sound guess as to what those are going to be. If our expenditures or there are one-time pieces in the budget or programs in the budget that are being proposed by a department that don't help, we don't meet our revenues, we'll pull those out as a package, and then when we see our taxable valuation, we can confirm what we are actually going to get in terms of taxes, entitlement share, all of those other programs, then we'll either, then what we can do is we can go in and approve those programs on their own, contingent on the revenue of having them, right? So we're still able to move forward because that tax evaluation doesn't come until the first or second week of August. So we're losing a whole month of July of getting anything done because we don't have a budget, but we have to wait till the tax evaluation. It's kind of backwards. So that's part of the rationale for accelerating this and saying, okay, so you may see us pull things out of the budget, create a decision package for the council, and then later come back to the council and say, okay, here's this decision package 2020-1, and it includes a police car, for example, and outfitting a police car, and a set of tires for the existing police car, whatever, as an example, right? And so you can say, why are you bringing this to us? Well, because we got our tax evaluation. We know we have the revenue. Here's a decision package. We'd like you to approve it. And you can say, well, yeah, if we have the revenue, sounds great. Or, no, we'd rather see the revenue go someplace else, whatever the case is. So does that process make sense? Okay. So getting into revenue, these revenue numbers are still fluid as we work through the rest of the month. Robert did some preliminary work this week trying to narrow down where we sat, but there's still some unknowns that we need to get back from the state. And he's still working through some deposits in our bank account from the state of Montana and making sure. So if you see our actuals maybe are off significantly, that's because he's still working on getting those books back into order. The problem with the state of Montana is they like to deposit money into your account but not tell you why or what it's for. You're supposed to get it. We know it's our money, but they just drop it in there and they don't even bother calling or sending an email as to what it's for. So we have to decipher by the dollar amount as to what we're supposed to expect. He's working through that process. It's a nightmare, but he's the man for the job. So you'll see revenue is listed here based on funds. In the general fund, we're not proposing any fee increases for general fund services. In fact, we've scaled back some fees that we had intended to propose. in fiscal year, or that we had proposed in fiscal year 2020, but never got to the opportunity to implement them. Given the economic climate being what it is, we're not proposing any significant fees. You will notice, however, that business license fees, there's no budget for that $10,000. That $10,000 is being redirected to economic development. So the $10,000 we collect in business licensing fees has been pulled out of the general fund, which is a hit. But we felt that that funding, being that it comes from the businesses for their licenses, would be best spent on economic development purposes for their community. So we're taking 100% of their fees and putting it back into whatever economic development programming we can develop or put together. And some of that we'll touch on when we get into planning and zoning. So that's one thing that will stand out to you. You'll also see a little bit of the law enforcement, of course, includes the chair of the school resource officer. There's some revenue in there. And then we budgeted a decrease in revenue from law enforcement services. Traditionally, they received $300 per lot as a lot sold in Twin Creeks. Obviously, lot sales out there have slowed down because they're full. So we don't anticipate a big influx of the $300 payments for the police department. That was a condition of that subdivision, that as a lot was sold and built on, that the town would receive a $300 payment. We're seeing those slow down because it's filling up. So if you place that same payment on other subdivisions, then we would, of course, see that come back up, but we're not budgeting necessarily for that because we don't want to count on it and not have it. The other things you'll see in terms of, I guess, you know, we said we're not proposing any new or any increases in fees. However, if the town council makes the decision on Thursday night to move forward with establishing a Parks and Recreation program formally, and making that position full-time, we'd like to implement some summer programming and after-school programming throughout the year. The fees collected from those programs then would help support the position and the Parks and Recreation program in its work. It's not going to completely cover the costs, obviously, because we're already currently spending tax dollars to fund Parks and Recreation. But that's part of our proposal, which we can delve more into on Thursday night, should the council go that direction. If the council goes that direction, we've put fees in here to demonstrate the offset of what those costs are. So there are recreation and culture fees in this budget for revenue. We do have a breakdown at the office as to what those fees might look like, and we're still digesting some of that. But I can tell you they aren't unreasonable for recreation programs, especially in a community of our size. So we're being very sensitive to the economic condition of our families in this region, and specifically in the Stevensville area, not just in the city limits. And in fact, we're going as far to propose fees that are different for city residents than for those who are not city residents. So if you live out in the county, you're paying modestly higher fee for recreation services than you would if you live in the city, because we understand you're tax paying and your fee should already be subsidized by what you're generating in taxes. So there's some philosophy there. Questions? Mr. Motley.
So in your rents and leases?
I just looked at that and was going to speak to that. There's $2,500 there for the Rural Fire District's lease of the base. Yeah. And that's an accurate number based on $5,000 a year, correct?
Correct.
Okay. City Court, right now, they're only projecting $10,000 in revenue based on past year's actuals. That, of course, could increase based on activity of the police force, and if they cite more people into court because we have more officers, there's correlation there. But of course, we don't treat the court as a revenue generating enterprise. Cemeteries happen to be rather lucrative, thanks to Laura, but we're also not projecting or asking for any increases there either. You will see an Interfund operating line there of $7,600. Part of the inflation in the general fund's budget is because for bookkeeping purposes and to simplify Robert's job slightly, we are allocating 100% of the fuel and vehicle maintenance for our public works vehicles, because we have a plethora of those, and then transferring money in from the water and sewer funds to offset those expenses. So this is one of those areas where you get to move money between funds because it's warranted. You're reimbursing the general fund for the expense of operating those vehicles. But currently, because we can't keep vehicle, it's hard, difficult to keep vehicles straight because every vehicle does something different every day. When we get the fuel bill, for example, every vehicle has a fuel card, but that vehicle, that tank of gas could have been spent on parks or who knows what, you know, water, sewer. It's just very challenging to allocate on a monthly basis how things are divvied out in the public works department. To code it, we're coding it all in one, and then we're percentaging it out and having those funds reimburse us for those costs.
It takes so much time to go through those. I mean, that is so smart.
So the vehicle sales, did you incorporate that into your revenues here?
No, it won't go into the general fund. It'll go into capital improvements to offset the costs of the vehicles we're buying for you.
Okay.
We're selling your crap to buy you new crap.
To help us all the crap that I have.
Sounds like
you're
the new guy.
So are you budgeting a vehicle for him this year?
We are. So what we're going to come forward to council with is we have encumbered the first vehicle. We made that order, and so that money's been committed. We're going to ask you for another vehicle this year. We asked you for two last year. You gave us one. This year we're going to ask for another one. And we're confident the capital fund can handle. Last year we were confident it could handle two vehicles, so if we did one last year, this year, if you remember, last year we allocated, how many mills was it? A couple of mills, like six mills?
Four mills?
It was equivalent to $11,000 that we allocated in revenue to the general, to the capital improvement fund. So we allocated mills to make sure that the capital improvement fund was getting a little bit of revenue. Figuratively speaking, it doesn't necessarily put a dent in a new police car, but it helps keep that fund moving with some revenue. So, as a philosophy, we don't want to be denting our new police cars. Yeah. Questions on the revenue in the general fund? Okay. This report we're going through, the report ID would be B250A, jumps right then into, we did the revenue, now we're going to jump right into expenditures. And this does this by account rather than drilling down into the objects, because again, we want you to see the 30,000 foot view. So in legislative services, which we corrected some coding in our bar system long, long ago when bars was first implemented for the town of Stevensville. We kind of just made it up. We got close, but one area was when we did the special audit. I think we mentioned this. When we did the special audit, Jennifer said, you're coding your pool wrong. Your pool shouldn't be in that code. You guys don't care about codes, but just so you know, when you see those differences, it's going to trigger something in your head, because you're going to see a blank in council, but you're going to see legislative services at $20,822. That funding, of course, includes the $250 honorarium and leaves your training services budget alone. A lot of that funding was unspent because we didn't do the Municipal Institute this year. So we're leaving that in case they do Municipal Institute, and maybe in the fall, or if somebody chooses to go to the League of Cities and Towns Conference, that opportunity is there, and there should be ample funding there to send all four of you someplace, somewhere. So know that exists. The executive services budget actually sees a decrease because there were some one-time expenditures in last year's budget. with equipment that we don't need again. So that would be something we'd spend cash on. That's the new roof. We will address court another night. The other thing in legal services, as it's been somewhat of a topic for this organization, you'll see that following the court budget right away, this is where we fix some coding, you'll see prosecution services. So if you noticed Mr. Owens's bill this last month, in the month of May,
got a trial.
There was significant expense on the prosecuting side. That's something we don't have any control over. It's entirely up, well, other than if we stop sending requests for prosecution to the court or to the attorney. If the police department didn't do that, then we'd maybe have a few less, or if they didn't write tickets, right? But that wouldn't be their job. Yeah, we don't not write tickets as a cost-saving measure. It's highly discouraged across the nation. At any rate, we don't have any control over those costs. If court takes 3 or 4 hours and we pay 3 or 4 hours for Scott's time, that's just how it works. So understand that when you see Scott's bill, those are two different distinctions. We've helped separate those. Legal services was under one account in the budget. We've helped distinguish those two services by separating prosecution services out, and we estimate that to come to a cost of $17,000 based on what we've experienced this year. Okay? And that's largely why you'll see, if you jump down to legal services, a little bit, four lines down from the prosecution services line, you'll see that that's also $17,000. Which is down from the $28,000 that we have spent so far this year. But that's, again, because we separated the two services out so that it was clear to council and the public what we spend on prosecution and what we spend on having a city attorney at the council and administration's disposal. So, any questions on that?
Yes. So the total would be, what would be the total budget for the legal?
Correct. And that's a very difficult number to come up with because we don't know legally what is going to happen. You know, if a suit is served on the town that insurance won't cover, or prosecution is another one of those things, one example where we didn't. And we have to work through allocation a little bit, and it's hard to do that, and so it all kind of got thrown in the general fund. But we had a series of meetings around water rates, and that was a legal issue that we had the city attorney there for those meetings. That comes to at a cost, of course, and so if we ventured into a topic that would require us to have an attorney present, then of course we'd have that funding available. So that's not necessarily something we start at zero and work our way up. Questions on legal fees?
Can I interject one thing real quick?
Just one.
In the past, I know you want to get out of here, I'm sorry. But in the past, right. I think it's important to remember that when you have police officers, your cost of doing business is going to go up. But if you have officers that are very effective in what they do, and, you know, there's an accountability piece there with law enforcement and the judicial system. You know, back in the old days, it wasn't uncommon to see a $30,000 revenue from the courts because of, you know, fines for DUIs and other things like that that would come in. So getting the right people in those right positions, we are not a revenue entity. Please remember that. No law enforcement agency is. Matter of fact, that's prohibited in Montana code from, you know, being a money-making entity. But you can't offset that cost, so bear that in mind. I know that we're not seeing a lot of revenues coming out of city court, but as we add officers, those revenues are going to go up too.
The other thing with city court, I'll just mention before I'll let Mr. Vick speak. Sometimes she orders fines, and those fines go to collections. So then we may see revenue in subsequent years from those fines. Another situation that she often will deploy is volunteerism, where she'll order them to community service, We usually receive the benefit of that community service at $10 an hour, and we'll have them do work for us at that rate. So just keep that in mind. If you see low fees, we also see other benefits. Dempsey?
Maybe James can explain it to me. So, and this is actually something I've been wondering for a little while now. Say, I'm going to use an example here. Say someone's speeding down Main Street, and instead of it being a Stevensville officer that pulls them over, but it's like a deputy or highway patrol, but they still go to our court for court, or they go to... Okay. So only time our court gets involved is if it's our police.
Correct.
Okay.
But wouldn't it be fun if we could get it to go the other way?
You wouldn't see a deputy come back to your ear ever again.
And the other side of this, too, is focusing on, you know, addressing some of the issues that we have with speed zones in our town and things like that, to look at city revenues coming in, city code violations, things like that. Incidentally, you know, when we get the night shift officer working, I'm going to task that person with code enforcement. I mean, that's another area that is going to get addressed. It needs to, desperately. I mean, there's so many properties in this town that are so far gone in violations that, again, not looking at that intently as a revenue source, but it is what it is. It will be, you know. But that's all part of how we do business. I mean, you got to be able to get out there and do the job, and the funding comes in support partially through... citation revenue, that's just reality.
We look at the swimming pool the same way. We know that our swimming pool fees are never going to pay 100% of the swimming pool's operating costs every year, so we supplement it with taxes. But if we didn't have fees, we wouldn't be able to run a pool. Code enforcement's a similar philosophy. We can't do code enforcement unless we get some restitution or fee back for deploying that service. That usually comes to the court.
The pool this year, Brandon?
We are.
Are
you? Robert's very adamant about opening the pool.
So, Bobby, I think we've set projected opening date for the 22nd of June. We were shooting for Monday, and the weather didn't cooperate. We needed some hot weather to do some repairs on the pool, and the rain, ironically, water, repairing a pool and water don't mix.
What's the state saying about this?
They're saying
a
lot of pools are opening.
Already open, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. Reduce capacity and social physical distancing, and then increase sanitation. Fortunately, chlorine kills a lot of yucky things, but then facilities also have to be cleaned on a regular basis, and that's why Bobby's so important, is because he's going to see to it that the youth that we hire to operate our pool follow the guidelines that the state has put forth, because we expect public health from the state or from the county is going to probably do more than one visit this year to make sure our pool's in compliance. So we want to make sure we don't jeopardize things like CARES funding.
That's scary. Having somebody come and inspect this pool.
Yeah, and they never announce it. They give us like an hour's notice and say, hey, we're coming, but we actually fare pretty well in our inspections.
Come and visit it today, and they were doing a bunch of patchwork.
Yeah. Okay, just a couple more pieces I want to get out of the way, and then I'll let you carry on with your evenings. Let me get my bearings here. Administration, we're not... The increase in administrative costs are largely related to the implementation of the new salary schedule. There are no significant new requests there. It's all operating costs. There is a boost in money for Town Hall Annex building facility maintenance, because we've had, I just know this just gets the fire chief all sorts of fired up, we have some deferred maintenance on that building we have to get addressed. So I know he'll speak to that if he were given the opportunity, but we don't have time. It's just one of those things. So the last piece that that I want to address in things that we wanted to cover on tonight's agenda was economic development piece, and as well as planning and zoning. And so what I'm proposing this year in the budget, and I completely understand it is a giant ask and a big ask, and we haven't And that's ask with a K. I realize the speakers aren't catching my K's. The hope, we're still working through some of the details of this proposal, but we wanted to at least get it off the ground and pitch it out to you folks to just see if there was any momentum behind it before we got too far into this. What I'd like to do, much like what we're doing with the public or the Parks and Recreation Department, is I'd like to formally develop or establish a community development department, or call it what you want, neighborhood services. Perhaps that's a better term. But what this department would entail is the building division and the planning and zoning division. I can tell you in the last 3 weeks that we have answered 3 to 4 planning and zoning calls a day on our phones. And the emails on planning and zoning issues, independent of significant application issues, have become extremely burdensome. As a zoning administrator, and as to be, it's been very clear that I'm expected to some degree to be a part-time position, not a full-time position. You're certainly not compensating it at full-time. The zoning administration is extremely time-consuming for our organization, especially as we see growth finger into our neighborhood or into our area from Missoula. I can just think, you know, without taking my shoes off, I can think on one hand of a number of businesses that are either looking or have purchased some property in Stevensville to relocate their business to escape property taxes. We're going to continue to see the growth. We have subdivision applications coming in. One is being processed for sufficiency review. Another is due probably within the next quarter. So Twin Creeks and Creekside are both going to see expansions. We're just seeing a whole lot of activity that I alone can't handle as a zoning administrator. That aside, besides the workload, I'm severely compromised as the zoning administrator because the mayor holds a vote under the Board of Adjustments, which is why you'll see that I defer variance staff reviews to HDR engineering, and that can be costly. We don't necessarily can't guarantee that our fees are always going to cover the costs to do that type of work or to contract that kind of work with HDR or any other planning firm. So I guess what I'm proposing to you as a conversation tonight is the concept of establishing a community development department, hiring a community development or neighborhood services director who would take care of the clerical work that goes behind the building department. Laura can speak to the amount of work it takes to issue permits and track their progress and then to make sure that we don't make a misstep. And I think we're all in this room aware of shortcomings when it comes to issuing permits and processing zoning applications. That's become more on Laura's desk than she cares to have with her other workload in public works. And so we'd like to see someone, the position would essentially be split between planning and zoning and the building department.
What's the name of this position?
We can call it neighborhood services director or community development director. I don't necessarily care. The function is the same. They're called different in different communities, of course. That person would oversee or would make sure that the administrative functions of the building department get accomplished. They would, of course, schedule and oversee inspections and supervise that department because it is a part-time department and it needs day-to-day attention. They would oversee all planning and zoning operations, so they would act as the zoning administrator, and they would process variance applications. They would do the staff reports. They would process subdivision applications. They would do the plan reviews for zoning. Every time a new permit is issued, something hits my desk for zoning review. If it's a single-family residential home, I get the ruler out and make sure it meets the setbacks. There's all of those things that have to be done on a daily basis, and even when I was just in the office 2 days a week, we would get complaints from builders that, well, I gave you this permit on Friday, but it's Tuesday and I'm ready to get the permit, or whatever the case is. They're increasingly less and less patient, and so that's part of why we want to see the development, we want to see the positivity in our community, we want to see the growth in a constructive way. very excited little dog. We should get an animal control officer.
Sounds like my backyard did about 3 weeks ago.
Are you saying for a full-time position?
I'm asking for a full-time position year-round.
Have you put that somewhere in the budget so we can see
yes.
how it's going to...
Okay. It is all incorporated into the budget based on the fee schedule. So if you looked at the first page I handed out, you'll see that the planning fund is deficient. We're going to evaluate some fees and charge fair. For example, we often get the question, can I have my business at this location? Here's what I do. Well, immediately what we do is we get the binder off the shelf and we go through the chart and and it's usually an hour and a half long conversation with someone on the phone. It's usually a realtor trying to sell a property. And so that's significant time being spent on one specific issue. What a lot of communities will do is if a realtor or a potential buyer wants a zoning determination and they want a clear-cut answer, and that's usually what they want. They want us to commit to an answer, and that sometimes is very difficult to do. They want us to commit to an answer. What we can do is provide them with a letter that says, here's what you are allowed to do with your property based on the information you've provided the town. And we can charge for that letter. A lot of communities will do that. And it's not an exorbitant amount of money you charge, but they're willing to pay that money because they want that answer and they want something to put with their title work when they buy the property. So usually, you know, you're not going to charge the average Joe who's buying a house because they know what they can do with their house if they're going to live in it, right? It's usually the tech company who wants to bring their company, you know, from L.A. and they want to know if they can do certain computer software programming in a certain location in town that would be unusual. And they don't want to take the time to read through our code. They want an official to make that determination. That's what we're running up against every day. Every day I spend at least an hour and a half on planning and zoning. And I don't necessarily have the background and experience to answer every question. A lot of my ability in planning and zoning has come from the institutional memory and what's been passed down to me from past administrations and having been around for 8 years with the town. But there, sometimes I run into situations I have no idea and I have to call up a colleague in another community and run the what if by them. And sometimes they don't have the answer either. Our development code, as you've probably come to realize in dealing with it, is in serious need of reform. It does not necessarily fit the needs of this community today like it did when it was adopted. I can't facilitate that reform on my own. We need somebody dedicated to that. The building fees will absolutely sufficiently support administrative help. That part of it I'm not concerned about. It would be the planning and zoning piece of it. The other piece I would like to see that position facilitate is the economic development arm of our government. With the closure of the Main Street office and the mothballing of that organization, our businesses are left high and dry in terms of those types of services. I would love to see the town partner somehow with maybe the Chamber of Commerce, but we're going to need a lead or a facilitator to make sure that we're on the ball in those regards. And I think that maybe that's a good use of that $10,000 we collect in business licensing fees, is to have a point of contact for our organization that says, you know, I am going to take care of, you know, the business development aspect of whatever the town of Stevensville can do. It doesn't mean that we're taking over what Main Street did, although we have taken over a number of those functions. For example, the visitor center piece of things, we now make sure that the brochures get stocked. We answer the phone line at City Hall, which rings probably 5 to 10 times a day, asking for the DMV.
You guys are on the phone and they answer the DMV.
Right. I mean, it would be nice to have a sole designated person who has, you know, the expertise in planning and zoning. It's going to be a recruitment effort, undoubtedly, but my hope is that we can find somebody with a little bit of planning experience. And some drive in economic development that could really help this community out. The other expense to that that you're not necessarily seeing in this budget that I would like to hear your input on, maybe not tonight, of course, because we're already going over our time allotment, but maybe individually if you have thoughts and you slip this under your pillow and sleep on it. We don't have space in City Hall for another person, you guys. We're living on top of each other, and so we do need to address this facilities aspect of this, and maybe that is the community development office rents or leases space elsewhere outside of our office, and then the fees need to support that. There's a whole lot. We could have this conversation all night, you guys, but I want you to have those things in the back of your head so that if I ask for something, it's not necessarily a surprise, like, oh, hey, we need to budget this much a year. You know, we need to budget $20,000 a year out of the community development budget in order to pay for office space because we need some place for these people to exist. We've moved the building department into the annex building, and so for now we're okay. And we do have some plans to move Bobby down to the park into a facility down there. So we're kind of rearranging, but that still leaves he's moving Bobby into
the shed.
Can we do one of the bathrooms or something?
Well, yeah, Bobby's there's a cavity between the two bathroom spaces that is being unused, so we're turning a shed into an office for Bobby. Because we are, I mean, right now, if we go into work tomorrow, we have the utility clerk, the mayor, the town clerk, the finance officer, and the parks and recreation director all within arm's length of each other. We're crammed into that office like sardines. Across the hall, we have two people working. The back is full. We can't intrude upstairs. That space is adequately utilized. So obviously, moving building department along was the next best thing, and they had the funding to pull that off and upgrade that facility. So keep those things in the back of your mind. Questions, concerns, comments, thoughts to share? I realize it's late. Good night. I guess
I. Nice job on this, Mayor.
Outside of this workshop, if you want to send me individual thoughts that you'd like to see incorporated into the next workshop, whether that is format, whether that is material, whatever it is, please, please, please just shoot me an email and let me know, or even call me if I'm available and let me know how I can help make this process as quick and smooth as possible. I set the deadline of July 1st. There is a contingency date in the calendar. But I'll tell you from a personal level, the other drive I have to get this budget done by July 1st is that in mid-July I go on paternity leave. And while I'll be around and be able to facilitate my job remotely, my face won't be seen for about 4 weeks at least. So I don't want to take any bugs home. So keep that in mind. I don't want to really go through a budget adoption from home. I'd rather do it in person. Thanks for your time tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you.